Hi, welcome to Restoratively Yours, Belvedere Youth Club podcast series about restorative practice. I am Jenny Courtney, BYC's General Manager. We are a youth club based in Dublin in our city, and in 2019, we embarked on a journey to become a restorative hub in the community. Restorative practice, RP in short, is a philosophy and a set of practices focusing on building and maintaining good relationships and dealing with conflict in a healthy way when it occurs. For us, it has become the way we want to do everything. In this series, you will hear our story, the ups and the downs of our journey through different voices. Dorothy, our RP consultant, will guide you along the way. We hope it will be inspiring and enlightening.
Hello. So in the second episode about implementation, you'll hear from Jonathan, youth team lead, from Paul, board member, Dennis, youth worker, and Jenny, the CEO of the organization, about how the process was for them. So what worked well and maybe what was more challenging.
So having James involved was really good because it was nearly like an impartial person coming in, having a conversation or creating a space. So I think that worked really well. James training staff worked really well and supporting staff. Creating spaces where we have smaller groups and more tailored groups worked really well. Also, creating spaces for a COP that worked really well every Wednesday, even every second Wednesday, even though we might have not done a COP the way a traditional COP was done, but I think that worked really well. Bringing in the trauma-informed trainer worked really well as part of the implementation. Having the board come on board with some interactions worked well. Then having James as part of the management team, that worked really well because he could sort of look at us as managers and also look at the team. So that's a lot of the things that would have worked really well with the implementation. I think that worked well, having the coordinator. I believe we should have had maybe the coordinator for a 3 to 5 year minimum. I think that would have supported James to fully implement or fully support the role he was in. I think maybe having James from 3 to 5 years on a part-time basis, less so having him fully in the service, would have really helped. So rather than having James for 2 years, 5 days a week, have James for 5 years, 3 days a week. I think that would have worked, where he could come in and come out, because I think, unfortunately, James got sucked into a lot of the stuff that was going on, and he's a very passionate guy and emotions running high, and things sort of, there's a bit of friction there, you know? But it's a good learning that as well. What I believe is, right, I believe I could have acted in James's role, right, because I did the upskilling, I did the getting started upskilling and trying the trainer. I believe at the time I could have done that, right, but there was a lot of sort of unconscious biases I would have had that wouldn't have been good, and I had relationships built and developed already, whereas James came in and James challenged me, and that was great. So I mean, really good. As in, when I say challenge, he questioned things. Whereas I probably wouldn't have questioned them things if I was leading that. So I was really, really good and positive. The difference is that James would have maybe come in and challenged things 5 days a week, and there would have been a bit of fatigue in the challenge. Whereas James might have strategically challenged a couple of days a week. So it felt like to me that James was challenging things for the sake of challenging things. But until I built up the relationship with him, I realised, no, he's not. He's just doing his job. Do you know what I mean?
The training worked well. I mean, I sat in and I did the training sessions that James did. I mean, they were during lockdown, so they were all online. They were really interesting experiences, because I had done the training before with Emma, but just to be part of the, even if it was online, with the wider group, just getting to know the youth workers, because again, I mightn't necessarily, in the old days, I might have been sitting on interview panels, I might have got to know people from being in and out. I don't probably know them as well as I would like to. So being part of the training was very positive in that light. So the training, I think, it threw up lots of issues. People had to kind of challenge themselves as well. You could even see that in the level that I was involved in. I'm not here day to day as part of the... So people had to kind of push themselves and kind of work out am I comfortable doing things this way? And you could see, like, some of the conversations that were going on as people were buying in to it, and as some people maybe not as quickly, it was kind of interesting. You could kind of see that here's people talking about their practice and trying to interrogate it in a way and see if this is something that fits, or is this the way I like to do things? Am I going to be, if James gives me this way of doing a restorative circle or doing a fishbowl, are these going to help me? Am I just easier just doing what I do? So those conversations I thought were kind of interesting. And there's probably some challenges there that you could say potentially, I mean, by having a restorative practice coordinator, did that mean that everything fell onto James's desk, so that if we needed to do something, James will do that. And it wasn't the responsibility or the accountability wasn't back with all the rest of the team. We can say that as much of the board as we can for everyone else. So that's an eternal question in terms of like, it does it be the, is it the dancer or the dance, like it's it.
So what I felt worked well was the circles, the check-in and check-out. I felt the day worked well because when we got familiar with doing them, like, we had been doing them at meetings as far as I can recall prior to James coming on board. But once James was here, there were regularly, there was at least twice a week that we would do them as a team at different meetings. And then we kind of incorporated them then into the young people, like at the start of our sessions with the young people. But again, that would depend on the staff member who would like be more familiar with them and who wouldn't be more familiar with the young people or practice them. The signage around the building was very good. It wasn't that it was in your face. It was that it was colourful. It was big and it was bright around the building. Like when you turn to come down the stairs, it's just there in front of you. When you walk into the computer room, it's just there at the pool table. Even the way that it's situated throughout the building, it's kind of eye-catching. And then the colours of it as well. Like you kind of see it and you become familiar with it. I thought that was good. James's approach as well at different times, his approach at different times was good. What didn't work well, everybody wasn't on board. I felt that everybody wasn't fully committed, that all of the staff members weren't fully committed. From what I could see, from what I was familiar with and what I could see, there was different approaches made. There was different questions asked during the circles, during the check-in and check-out. There'd be some of them be light-heart questions, you know, if you're a superhero, what would you like to be? And then there was other questions of what way do you deal with conflict, or what do you see as vulnerability, what does respect mean? You know, that was kind of like trying to embed it into your head, or probably see where we were all coming from, you know. What did we each, you know, think that respect is, you know. So I think there was different approaches, and there was other approaches as well. There was some... we had the COP sessions fortnightly. Again, there were some of them that were very light-hearted, and then there were some of them that got to the root of, I suppose, how would you say it, like the conflict that was at that time, or different perspectives on different things did come up in the COPs. And again, maybe for some people they were difficult at the time, but there were conversations I felt had to happen, because again, you could see where different people were coming from, different perspectives of where it's come from. But I suppose how for me to describe it is that, again, as in youth work, that, or as in childcare or family dynamics or whatever, that if you get somebody that is set, like they say, yes, they don't have the emotional intelligence. Everybody, for me, from my perspective of it, everybody has some level of emotional intelligence. Everybody has some level of restorativeness in them. Everybody has some level of compromise, of compassion, of empathy, of seeing something from somebody's perspective. But if they don't want to be restorative, if they don't want to be compassionate or empathetic, or they don't want, yes, I see it from your perspective, but I don't want to change my perspective of it, or I don't want to bend, basically, well, then they're not going to do it. So I think that, yes, you could have tried anything, but some people are just, it's not that they're not restorative, they just don't want to be. If that's from my perspective of it. To me, I felt that it was a power struggle, I felt. That it was a power struggle. And there were several members of staff, past and present, that it was a power struggle. That it was more of, you're telling me that in some ways it was like, you're telling me I have to be restorative rather than asking me to be restorative. And again, if I don't want it, no matter how much you ask me, I'm not going to do it. Like James, there was a restorative practice, like he was implementing a restorative practice, so he had a lot of responsibility to implement a restorative practice. And then in certain situations, I don't know if he's kind of like, you would have to be very, like, I don't know if you kind of, if at times he became a target, you know, that is James telling me to do this? You know, like if James said, this is the way we're going to move forward. So if the wording wasn't specific, that is it, you know, like we're going to move forward like this. So therefore then in some people's head, did they take it, okay, you're telling me this is the way I have to move forward, you know? Mm-hmm. And then it was James that was saying we have to move forward in this way, but I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? So that's only for me on the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I couldn't really tell you 100%. Like you'd have to, the individuals themselves, and even if they know themselves, you know, why it was so hard for them to go along with it, I don't know.
Yeah, so I suppose embarking on this journey has been transformative, but it has also had its challenges as well. You know, for me, we had an approach, we had a vision, and then we hadn't got our RP strategy done in advance of our implementation piece, which looking back now, maybe we could have done that. But I don't think it could have been done before the implementation because we were learning as we were going through as well. Like we hadn't got a blueprint for restorative practice and how to embed it within a youth service because it hadn't been done before. So I suppose our focus, we wanted to focus internally first and internally looking at the board. So from the board down to the staff, from the staff up to the board, and how we conduct ourselves and engage with each other restoratively. We wanted then to bring that down, I suppose, review governing documents, policies and procedures to make sure that they encompassed the RP model. And then we needed to filter all of this down into our operations and our engagement with young people as well. So looking back now, it's been a worthwhile journey, but it has had its challenges as well. For me, the first thing we needed to do internally was to train the staff, you know. And when I met with the RP coordinator when he first started, he did an interview with everybody to see where everybody was kind of at and what they thought the whole RP process was going to be about moving forward. and he got different perceptions and visions. And, you know, as I said, we had a shared vision, but that changed and moved many times. But the staff got the training, so we all engaged in our training first, and I think that was really a foundation and a stepping stone. The only challenge in that is staff turnover, you know. So you'd have staff getting trained and then they'd leave, you'd have new staff coming in. So it's constantly evolving, you know, and you kind of have to keep looking at it to see, well, hold on a minute, who is still RP trained, who still needs additional training and stuff. So that was one of the challenges. But then I suppose when we got the staff buy-in and the staff training, we reviewed our policy documents in consultation with the staff as well to ensure that they were kind of happy with them. And we encompassed then the RP model and stuff. Obviously, RP, it's about listening to everybody involved in the organisation, and everybody has an equal voice. Obviously, as the CEO, I have decisions to make as well. And that mightn't be in line with everybody's ideologies. But I have to make the best decisions I feel that's needed for the organisation. And I believe that I've done that. But the biggest part and in embedding the RP was actually listening to what staff had to say, whether I went with their suggestions or perceptions or visions. That was another thing, but the point was that they had an option and a space to say their feelings on things. So I think that all kind of worked well. Some of the stuff where we probably would have found challenging was the balance, I suppose, getting the balance, because the more autonomy you give staff, like, first of all, you need to see it's building the capacity. We need to build the capacity to give autonomy. So maybe we give autonomy too quick without building the capacity of the staff. And that's something that I'm kind of reflecting on at the moment. Something that I found kind of challenging was trying to get staff at some points to take accountability for certain things. And you can't force anybody. None of us can be forced to take accountability. That's something we need to do ourselves. But if people haven't got the emotional capacity or the emotional awareness to see where they're wrong, it can be quite challenging. You know, so it was getting the balance between supporting people to take accountability and then what coming up with consequences then if they didn't take accountability, because there has to be consequences then for people's actions. But then staff is being told, oh, you're not being very, they're saying to me, you're not being very restorative in that approach. But for me, restorative is like supporting people to be accountable, and for everything we do or don't do, there are consequences. So that was quite challenging. Another part of it was probably staff are all at different emotional capacities. They're at different, some would be more in tune with their emotional capacity, some wouldn't be, and their emotional awareness. So that was quite challenging. Everyone was at different levels. Restorative practice is obviously voluntary participation, just like youth work. But if staff don't buy into restorative practice, if you have some staff that's not buying into it, it becomes very, very challenging then to embed throughout our operations. So I think the majority of our staff had been trained at some level or had some awareness of restorative practice before the restorative practice coordinator had started with us. And they had got some training through NCI, through the restorative practice coordinator there called Emma. And Emma has her approach on how she supports and trains people. And then we hired a restorative practice coordinator that had a completely different approach. That doesn't mean one is right and one is wrong. They're just different. But I think one of the challenges was the staff accepting the difference in the different approaches by the different coordinators. That proved quite challenging. Obviously, in every organisation, conflict arises, and the whole purpose, I believe, with restorative practice is that if you work on the relationship first, and the relationship is in place, that when the conflict arises, it's maybe a little bit, maybe not easier, but it can be managed, the conflict can be managed better once the relationship is in place. Because you have that respect in place between the individuals. So for us, if anything came to grievance or disciplinary processes and stuff, all staff were encouraged, and service users, students, they were encouraged to enter into an RP process first before going any formal routes, you know. So that was clear. Now, the challenge in that was, and we had got one instance over the 2 years where a student that was on placement here became disgruntled with an employee, and we encouraged it. We actually, they had RP training as well, actually, and we encouraged the RP process to start initially, but they refused to buy into that. So where does that leave us then as an organisation, do you know? So we were straight in then to a formal process, which, that's the challenge with restorative practice. It's voluntary. And if people don't buy into that, then we can have all the policies written in accordance to RP language and practices and the model. But it's not what the paper it's written on if people don't buy into it. Well, I think the implementation, although it had its challenges, I can see the transformative change that it has brought to the U Club. I can see what it has brought to the staff, to the team and to the morale and how we engage with each other. But most importantly, I can see the difference it has made with our young people. Like, for some of our young people, their emotional capacity would be quite limited. You know, even to be able to say, I feel sad, Jenny. Or I feel glad, you know. So the check-ins and that process of circling up when young people came in, that was so important, you know, because it helped us gauge where the young people were at. If they're at a 10, are they bouncing around? They probably need to go into the hall, burn a bit of energy. Are they at a 2? Okay, so they didn't have a great day today. So maybe they need an extra little chat or somebody just to walk with them one-to-one, you know. And I remember there was one... there was conflict that kicked off that actually in the hall, and we brought the young people out. We felt it wasn't too much that we needed to leave it for a day or so, but we brought them out anyway. And it was, we sat in, facilitated it, asked the questions, you know, and to actually hear one of the young people say, I feel sad because of what you said to me. Like, for me, that's transformative, you know. And that's why I'm such a supporter of RP. And I believe that, like, with further implementation, we can really, really broaden it out. One of the areas where we kind, not that we failed, but it was challenging. Like, you have to realise, we started implementing RP at a time when the pandemic was only, like, we were all in fear. We didn't know what we were doing. Can we walk? Can't we walk? We still needed to deliver a service to our young people. We're at a high level in need, you know. So then we were introducing a whole new model. You know, we had to go by guidelines as well and our own internal COVID response plan, and we had to work with small numbers. But best practice suggests that you get better outcomes or increased tangible outcomes when you work with larger numbers in terms of RP. But we couldn't do that. So it was a very challenging, rocky time to be even attempting to embed a new programme, and especially a programme like restorative practice. So although we ticked things off and we had a plan, you know, one of the things that I feel we need to kind of delve a little bit more in and get more support with and engagement is with the parents and guardians. That was a key part. Like, so we have looked at new members coming in, and as part of their induction process, that we engage with the parents and guardians and we give them a brief. The RP coordinator came up with a one pager just to give a brief overview, synopsis of what restorative practice is, so that they know when their young person is in this club, this is the model that we use and this is the approach that we're going to take. But I think we could do a little bit more on that now. moving forward. I don't think we're at a stage where all parents and guardians are fully aware of the approach and the model that we use. So I suppose the role of the RP coordinator was to build capacity among the team to enable us to continue to work restoratively together moving forward. So basically the RP coordinator had to do themselves out of a job, and that was always the plan. That was the role, like. But for some strange reason, I was nervous at the beginning when the RP coordinator was the person wasn't in the post anymore, because it was like, okay, there was a lot of work done, there was a lot of work that needed to be done daily, and it was like, how are we going to continue to be able to deliver at that capacity? How are we going to continue to be able to keep our eye on the ball and not drop all the good work that's after being done, you know? But in fairness to the RP coordinator, he had identified two champions before he had left. Very, very capable, competent people who really, really believe in RP as well. So that was in place, and it was just about me then, I suppose, sitting down as well, and then the RP advisory committee sitting down and supporting those two people to continue on the journey and help us to continue on the journey of restorative practice. But it needs to be realised as well that that's an additional part of their work now, you know. So, yeah, I was quite nervous at the start when the post was no longer there. But I do think, like, obviously our meetings still all take place at the start with a check-in, a closing circle. We need to continue now our communities of practices. External community of practice are going really well, but it's about putting the focus now back on ourselves internally, because for me, we can't move further outside if we haven't got all our stuff in line inside, you know. And I do believe that there's still a long way to go with that. We have made a lot of ground, but then again, with staff changing and stuff, you kind of feel sometimes, oh, you're back to the start again, you know. But we'll never be back at the start, but there's always room to improve. Thank you for listening to our podcast, and stay tuned for our next episodes.